Good evening. I'm going to be in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 13 to begin our study together tonight. And then I want you to be ready in John chapter 13. So Galatians 5:13 to begin and then John chapter 13. We are spending our time this week considering Bible teaching about attitude. Obviously, what we're talking about is good attitude as defined by God, essential for each of us and should be checked on a regular basis. And I'm working this week on the assumption that nobody has a fully developed, perfect attitude. There is progress to be pursued by each one of us, growth to be committed to with respect to attitude, our inner disposition. What we're going to do tonight is check our serve. And this statement from Paul introduces that idea in Galatians 5 and verse 13. For you were called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. We're going to check our serve. Through love serve one another. Good attitude, as defined by God, will always produce service. Good attitude, as defined by God, will always produce service. Service to God first. And then, as a product of that, we serve one another. And in preaching the gospel, we serve the lost. I need to check my serve. Now I want you to be with me in John chapter 13, please. The Gospel of John in chapter 13. One way to check how we serve is to go back to the example of the one who served on earth absolutely perfectly, Jesus Christ. John chapter 13. I'm going to read verses 1 through 17 in John chapter 13. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet, for I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done for you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Here's where I believe I need to begin. Sometimes we need to move a distraction out of the way. So that's where I'm going to begin. Not everything described in the Bible is intended for literal duplication today. Now, be sure you stay with me so you'll hear what I'm talking about. Not everything described in the Bible is intended for literal duplication today. The Bible describes many things, and the idea is not that we literally duplicate everything we read in the book. The idea is we discover what is being illustrated and become engaged at that level with focus on principles about our relationship to God. Now stay with me. I'm going to give more explanation. Noah built an ark. We don't need to build an ark, though there were some people in Austin the other day who probably started. We don't need to build an ark, but we must become engaged in the obedience that story illustrates. A New Testament example, Paul and the other early preachers rode on donkeys and horses and perhaps in chariots, and we know in ships, to take the gospel to the lost. I came here this week in a Ford. The idea is not that we must use their methods of travel. The idea is that we take the gospel to the lost. So, in the case of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples, the idea is not that we take up that exact routine and turn that into a ritual that stands alone and that satisfies this singular requirement. I've served one another. I wash their feet. No, the idea is for us to read this and discover what is being illustrated and then become involved at that level. Some say, first, find the principle and then let that principle teach you and prompt you to the appropriate attitudes and behaviors that would flow from it. I believe that's the right approach. We've read what Jesus did and said. To quickly conclude that I've got to take up exactly that form of service and no other and make a ritual of it is not the point. Find the principle and let that principle teach us and prompt us to the appropriate attitudes and behaviors. Now, what confirms this approach is there is no evidence that after John 13, the disciples turned this into a standalone ritual. In fact, foot washing is not ever mentioned again in the New Testament. That tells me Jesus was not setting up some sort of standalone ritual to be perpetuated and enforced by his apostles. So we are correct in finding the principle that's being illustrated and becoming engaged in whatever attitudes and behaviors express that principle in John 13. So I'm ready to say to you now, the principle is service based on love. Service based on love. That's the principle that's being illustrated by the Lord. Verse 1 says, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. So whatever comes after verse 1, all the way over to verse 17 or 20, is about the principle of service based on love. Reading this and giving good thought to this can enable us to love and serve as Jesus loved and served. This is all about attitude that expresses itself in the action of serving one another. I want to make some observations now based on what we've read and studied so far in John 13. Washing feet was slave work. We should remember the world that Jesus lived in had very definite structure. It was a culture that was tightly ordered by tradition. There were certain things men didn't do. There were certain things women did and things women didn't do. There were servants and masters. There were skilled people and unskilled people. There were people of royal family and there were others who were common. The rich and the poor, the Jews and the Gentiles. There was structure and rank and order and cultural prejudices. And there were lines you didn't cross. Washing someone's feet was only considered acceptable by the lowest of slaves. A child might wash a parent's feet. A wife could wash the feet of her husband. A Gentile slave could wash the feet of a Jewish traveler. You could wash the feet of a dying friend as a sign of grief and affection. I'm saying these were well-known cultural limits and rules. There was a protocol and a class structure, rigid practices held in common back then. Jesus stepped outside all those common protocols, rose from the meal, wrapped a towel around his body, and washed the feet of his disciples. It was love expressed in humble service. Love that came out of his heart through humble service to his servants, his disciples. He became their servant. Is there ever anything, some job or task or need, about which you say to yourself, I don't do that kind of work? Be careful about that. I'm not talking about something you cannot do. I'm talking about something you are capable of doing, but you will not lower yourself to that place. It is beneath your perception of your dignity. Somebody else can do that. I tell you what that is. That's an attitude problem. Jesus illustrates the humility he had that each of us should have. Philippians 2:5, where we started Sunday morning. Being willing to do whatever needs to be done, and if necessary, crossing over common cultural expectations, rolling up your sleeves, maybe getting dirty, and doing what needs to be done for others. I say to you, we must guard against any perception of self-importance and self-exaltation and arrogance that would separate us from the good work that needs to be done for others. The principle is apparent in John chapter 13. Jesus did this without being asked. In fact, I believe there's indication implied in the context here. The men were shocked. And they would never have asked him to do this. Simon Peter was shocked. And every time he was shocked, you could tell when he opened his mouth. It was a breach of hospitality and social structure. But Jesus did this to show his love for these men in this humble way, without being asked to. I'll tell you, I like the attitude that says, I'll do anything you ask me to do. I commend that attitude. Just tell me what to do and I'll do my best. I admire that attitude, but let's go beyond that. I really admire the attitude that doesn't say anything, but just does what needs to be done. You see what needs to be done. You know that you have the ability to do it. And you don't wait for someone to give you the assignment. You don't complain that the job is not being done. You see what needs to be done. And you do it to the best of your ability. even if nobody's watching. I'll get to that in a minute. I've been at Laurel Heights in McAllen for about 29 years, getting close to 30 now. And there's always been people there like that. And I know you've got people like that here. And in the congregations represented by people here, they see what needs to be done. They don't make a big deal about it. They just take up the task and they do their best, and it doesn't matter if nobody knows about it. If you have to beg people to do things or make publicity promises, it demeans the whole concept of service and discipleship that comes from humility, that comes from faith. Jesus illustrates the value of doing what needs to be done without being asked. Jesus served with no expectation of reward. Compare that to our culture today. In our culture, we are way into rewards and prizes and pay and benefits and praise and publicity. Sometimes you just show up to an event, you get an award. The question comes up all the time, what do I get out of this? People will not be embarrassed to say, am I going to do this for nothing? Or quietly, we may think this way, though we may not verbalize our interest in reward. We may engage in some sacrifice or service, quietly thinking, people are really going to be proud of me. People are going to think I'm great if I do this. Jesus entertained no motives or thoughts in the direction of being a celebrity, being praised. He was crucified. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Love takes us to places of service pride would never take us. Love takes us to places of service pride would never take us. The way of the authentic disciple of Christ is the way of quiet, humble service to the Lord and to others, without expectation of reward or applause or praise. Luke 6:35, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. That's our standard. It is high. It is God's pleasure we seek, though people here may never see and never compliment what we do. I saw this on social media today. Don't help me if you have to tell everybody about it. Doesn't that express the point? Don't help me if you have to tell everybody about it. Help me because you love me and you want to please the reward, please the Lord. Jesus served those who did not deserve to be served. I want you to think about what we often do, about our generosity and serving and sacrifice and helping people. One of the first things we do in that process is we think in these terms. Are they qualified? We look for qualifications. I'm surprised we don't ask people to hand in a resume before we help them. Are they qualified? Does this person I'm going to help really deserve to be helped? We process that thought. I understand that at some level that question is valid, but my concern is we may take it so far with such inflexibility we may wind up helping nobody. Nobody may be qualified because our boundaries are so narrow. They don't meet our standards. The people we could help, we don't help because, well, they're just not good enough for us. If we are not careful, we can form such a rigid mindset. We isolate ourselves from people who really need our help. Who are sinners? Like us. We wind up not doing what Jesus wants us to do because we've written up in our minds a tight set of rules. Nobody deserves help because we've got this tight, rigid set of rules. Sometimes our thinking runs along the lines of Pharisees. But I want you to think about this. Jesus washed the feet of Simon Peter. Did he deserve to be helped? Before the night would end, those feet would stand at a Roman fire as Peter denied Jesus three times. And Jesus had warned Peter about it. But then there's somebody else in the crowd. Think about Judas. Jesus washed the feet of Judas Iscariot. The feet that had already carried him to the Jewish leaders where he bargained away the life of Jesus for a few coins. Before this night would end, those same feet would carry him back to the Jews where he would completely abandon Jesus to his enemies. Jesus washed the feet of the other 10. And before the night, they would all run away in fear. Jesus knew all this, but they were qualified. He served them anyway. Have you ever considered some of the people we may not try to reach and may not try to help? If we would approach them and do our best with them, it may be the turnaround point for them. Of course they're not qualified. They're sinners. But if we could break through that rigid barrier we have set up, maybe our approach to them would be the turnaround point. God can use us to accomplish good things through our service to others. It may be sacrifice that takes time. It may be difficult. There may be tension involved. It may require some money or some other resources that we cherish. It may be we need to connect people with skills we do not have. Connect with people with skills we have that they do not have. We need to develop through faith in Christ an eye for all of this, serving others as Jesus illustrated. We are never more like Jesus than when we're obeying God and serving others. Those things are connected. Loving God, obeying Him, leads to loving others and serving them. And in Luke 6 and verse 40, the disciple is not above his master, but everyone that is perfect shall be as his master. I hope we are all where we need to be about all of this, and if not, pray to God. Ask Him to forgive you and help you, and make that prayer something that you become engaged in regularly after you say amen. And then search and look for ways that you can serve and help and sacrifice and reach others and help Christians, all to the glory of God. If you're never applauded, never seen, true service comes from a heart that loves God and is an outgrowth of the humility that we learn from Christ. Being a true servant will make a huge difference in your life. Who will follow Jesus in the way John describes in John 13? Let's be standing as we sing.